Huh, Ranjit said thoughtfully. And that's still going on? Well, sort of. The superpowers don't commission it anymore. There's been too much publicity. Anyway, they don't have to because there are plenty of uncommitted countries that automatically pick up and question people with inexplicable criminal records. Like pirates who are beyond the pale for them anyway, and especially like pirates who seem to be hiding their identities. Like you, they thought, because of the name business. And then they trade off information to the sanctimonious countries because that's where the law lord's decision comes in. The lords did a commission on information derived from torture way back when, and concluded that, for moral reasons, such information could never be used in any legal proceedings. On the other hand, it would be perfectly proper, they said, to turn it over to, say, the police. He looked up as the two women were advancing on them. And now we have to buckle up, because I guess we're coming into Bandaranaike. Only listen. You wouldn't believe what deals we had to make and what promises we had to give to spring you loose from where you were. So help me keep those promises. No matter what, you don't ever tell anybody anything that can identify any of the people who held you, or I'll be in deep trouble, and so will my dad. I promise, Ranjit said, meaning it. And then he added mischievously, You said you checked on the girls. How's good old Maggie doing? Gamini gave him a pained look. Oh, good old Maggie's fine, he said. She married a U.S. senator a couple of months ago, sent me an invitation to the reception, as a matter of fact. So I went to Harrod's and picked out a nice fish slice to send her, but I didn't go myself. Chapter 17 Heaven. As the BAB 2200 rapidly taxied toward a gate, Captain Dr. Jeannie delivered her verdict. What Ranjit really needed was rest, kindly care, and food. Enough food to put back the 8 or 10 kilos of body mass that his extraordinary rendition diet had taken from him. Although, she added, it wouldn't hurt for him to spend the next couple days in a hospital either. The party waiting to greet him at the gate, however, vetoed that. That party was only one person, but that person was Mevrouw Beatrix Voorhulst, and she was not in a mood to be contradicted. The place for Ranjit to recuperate, Mevrouw Voorhulst declared, was not some impersonal factory that generated quantities of medical care but very little love. No. The right place for Ranjit to regain his strength was a comfortable, caring home. Hers, for instance. So it was. Beatrix Voorhulst was certainly right about her promise of great care, too, because at the moment Ranjit arrived, every resource of their quite resourceful household was devoted to him. He had a room as vast and cool as his hottest and sweatiest prison night could have imagined. He had 3 wonderful meals a day. No, more like a dozen of them. Because every time he closed his eyes for a moment, he woke to find a perfect apple or banana or icy-cold pineapple spear waiting beside his bed. Better still, in the long run, he won his argument with the doctors that Gamini had ordered to double-check him. True, he first had to convince them that for all the time of his captivity, he had been up and about every day without harm, or at least every day when he wasn't so bruised and beat up that walking hurt more than it was worth. But then he had the freedom of that grand house and its grander gardens, including the swimming pool, and what a delight it was to backstroke dreamily across that gently cool water, with the hot sun blessing him from the sky and the palms swaying overhead. And he had access to the news. That was not altogether a good thing. His time without access to print or television had not prepared him for the details of all the things that had been going on around the planet Earth. The murders, the riots, the car bombings, the wars. None of those were the worst of the bad news, though. That came when Gamini looked in for a minute before leaving Sri Lanka for some more urgent, but of course unspecified, errand. As he was actually at the door to leave, he paused. There's one thing I didn't tell you, Ranj. It's about your father. Oh, right, Ranjit said remorsefully. I'd better call him right away. But Gamini was shaking his head. "Wish you could," he said. "The thing is, he had a stroke. He's dead." There was only one person in the world Ranjit wanted to speak to at that moment, and he had him on the phone before Gamini was out of the Vorhulst house. That was the old monk, Suraj, and he was overjoyed to hear Ranjit's voice. Less so, of course, to discuss the death of Ganesh Subramanian, but curiously, not particularly sad about it either.
"Yes, Ranjit," he said, "your father was moving heaven and earth to find you, and I think he just wore out. Anyway, he came back from another visit to the police, complaining he felt tired, and the next morning he was dead in his bed. He had not been in really good health for some time, you know."
"Actually, I didn't know," Ranjit said sorrowfully.
"He never said. He did not wish to worry you. And Ranjit, you must not be worried. His jiva will be greeted with honor, and his funeral was good. Since you had been taken from us, I was the one who said the prayers and made sure there were flowers and rice balls in his coffin, and when he had been burned, I myself carried his ashes to the sea. Death is not the end, you know."
"I know," Ranjit said, more for the monk's sake than his own.
"He may never even need to be born again. And if he is, I am sure it will be as someone or some creature near you. And oh, Ranjit, when you can travel, please come and see us. And do you have a lawyer? There is a little bit in your father's estate. Of course it all goes to you, but there are documents to file."
That troubled Ranjit. He had no lawyer. But when he mentioned it to Mevrouw Vorhulst, she said that wasn't a problem, and from then on he did have a lawyer. Not just any lawyer either, but a partner in Gamini's father's firm whose name was Nigel de Saram. What troubled Ranjit a good deal more was the stabbing guilt he felt. He hadn't known of his father's death, and the reason for that was that he had not bothered to ask. Oh, sure, he told himself, he had been full of 1,000 other concerns. But if it had been the other way around, would Ranjit have slipped his father's mind? Not counting servants, Mevrouw Vorhulst was his only visitor for the first few days. But then he argued, and the doctors had to agree, that no stress any visitor might cause him would come anywhere near the stress caused by strong young jailers hitting him with clubs. The barriers were reduced. The next morning, while Ranjit was experimenting with some of the Vorhulst's exercise machines, the Vorhulst's butler came into the gym, cleared his throat, and said,
"You have a visitor, sir."
Ranjit's mind had been far away. "Have there been any messages for me?" he asked. The butler sighed.
"No, sir. If any messages come, they will be brought to you at once, as you requested.
Now Dr. de Saram would like to see you. Shall I show him in?" Ranjit quickly put on one of the Vorhulst's infinite supply of dressing gowns. Lawyer de Saram quickly took charge. He didn't seem very junior to Ranjit. He was maybe 50 or 60, maybe more, and he was clearly good at what he did. He didn't have to be told about the bequest from Ranjit's father. Although he had been asked to handle Ranjit's affairs barely 48 hours before, he had already established Ranjit's existence with the appropriate Trincomalee court and had a pretty good idea of the value of the bequest.
"Not quite 20 million rupees, Mr. Subramanian," he said, "but not far under it either, or at the current rate of exchange, about $10,000. The bulk of it is 2 pieces of property, your father's home and a smaller house that is currently unoccupied."
"I know the house," Ranjit told him. "Is there anything I have to do?"
"Not just now," de Saram told him. "Although there is one possibility that you may wish to give some thought to. Dr. Bandara himself would have wished to do this for you, but, as you know, he is involved in some highly classified matters with the United Nations."
"I do know, but I don't know much," Ranjit said.
"Of course. The thing is that you might normally have a claim for damages against the people who, prevented you from coming home for so long, but, Ranjit said, I know, we aren't to talk about those people.
Exactly so, Disaram declared, sounding relieved. However, there is another avenue you may wish to take. It would be possible for you to bring an action against the cruise line company on the grounds that they should not have allowed their ship to be taken over by pirates. That would not be for as large a sum as the other, of course, both because their responsibility is a little harder to establish, and also because their solvency is not very strong.
No, wait a minute, Ranjit said. They had their ship stolen, which I was on because of my own stupidity, and now I should sue them for letting it happen? That doesn't sound fair.
For the first time, Disaram gave him a friendly grin. Dr. Bandara said you would say that, he announced.
Now, I think my car should be about ready.
And indeed, just then there was a knock on the door. It was Vas, the butler, to announce that that was the case. And then, before Ranjit could say anything, the butler addressed him directly.
There are no messages for you, sir, he added. And, if I may, I didn't want to trouble you before. We were all deeply saddened to learn of the loss of your father.
It wasn't that what the butler said reminded Ranjit of his father's death. He didn't need reminding. The loss was part of him, day and night, a wound that did not heal. The worst thing about death was that it irrevocably ended communication. Ranjit was left with a long list of things he should have said to his father and never had. Now that the opportunity was lost, all those unsaid expressions of love and respect were silting up inside Ranjit's heart. And of course there was no more cheer to be found in the news. Fighting had flared up between Ecuador and Colombia, new squabbles were arising over the division of Nile water, and North Korea had filed a complaint before the Security Council accusing China of diverting rain clouds from Korean rice paddies to their own. Nothing had changed. It was just that the world population was now irretrievably one person short. But there was one thing he could do. Should have done long since, and by his sixth day as a guest in the Vorholst home, Ranjit finally demanded and got a copy of that frantic communication he had rushed off from the plane. He studied it as critically, as demandingly, and as judgingly as any freshman composition teacher had ever looked over a student's final term paper. If the kind of mistakes that might disqualify him were there, he was going to find them. He was crushed to discover that there indeed were some, two of them on his first look, then four, then one or two additional passages that weren't entirely wrong, but did seem to be not entirely clear either. Ranjit had excuses. It was all due to that last stretch of 7 or 8 weeks, when he had at last completed the proof in his mind, all that he could manage to complete since he was lacking paper, ink, or computer, and only kept rehearsing it step by step, terrified that he might forget some crucial step. The question was, what to do about those mistaken bits? Ranjit worried over that question for all of one day and much of that night. Should he send the magazine a list of corrections? That would seem the sensible thing to do, but then Ranjit's pride got in the way, because the mistakes were really rather trivial, things that any decent mathematician would spot at once and almost as quickly see how to repair, and he had a horror of seeming to beg. He did not send another communication to nature, though most nights after that, while trying to go to sleep, he all over again worried the question of whether he should have. Ranjit wished he had a better idea of what a publication such as Nature did with submissions like the one he had sent them. He was pretty sure that if they had any idea of publishing it, their first step would be to send copies of it to 3 or 4 or more experts in that particular area to see that there weren't any glaring mistakes in it.
How long could that take?
Ranjit didn't know. What he did know was that it had already taken a lot longer than he would have liked. So every time the butler knocked on the door to announce a visitor, Ranjit's hopes soared, and every time the butler announced that visitor's trivial errand, his hopes crashed again. Chapter 18 Company. On the seventh day of Ranjit's stay with the Vorholsts, the butler announced another visitor, and it was Myra de Souza.
"Am I intruding, Ranjit?" she asked at once. "Aunt B said I could look in on you as long as I didn't keep you from resting."
Actually, he had in fact been resting, and Myra de Souza was certainly keeping him from it. He didn't want to say that, and did his best to manufacture conversation.
"What are you doing now?" he asked. "I mean, are you still at the university?"
She wasn't. Hadn't been since that sociology class they had shared. Had in fact just come back from a post-doc session. Post-doc! He had had no idea how far up the academic ladder she had climbed. At MIT in America. And naturally he asked,
"Studying what?"
"Well, artificial intelligence, more or less." He decided to ignore the cryptic "more or less."
"So how's artificial intelligence doing?"
She grinned at last.
"If you mean how close are we to getting a computer to have a reasonable chat with us, terrible. If you go back to the kinds of artificial intelligence projects that the people who started the field were trying to solve, not bad at all. Did you ever hear of a man named Marvin Minsky?"
Ranjit consulted his memory and came up empty.
"I don't think so."
"Pity. He was one of the best minds ever to try to define what thought was, and to find ways of getting a computer to actually do something you could call thinking. He used to tell a story that cheers me up sometimes."
She paused there, as though unsure of her audience's interest.
Ranjit, who would have taken pleasure in hearing her announce train delays or closing stock prices, made the right sounds, and she went on.
"Well, the thing is that in the beginning of AI studies, he and all the other pioneers, too, considered pattern recognition as one of the hallmarks of AI. Then pattern recognition got solved in a rather everyday way. Checkout counters in every supermarket in the world began reading the prices of every item from barcodes. So what happened? AI simply got redefined. Pattern recognition got left out of the recipe because they'd solved that one, even if the computers still couldn't make up a joke or figure out from the way you looked that you had a hangover."
Ranjit said, "So can you get a computer to make up a joke now?" She sat up.
"I wish," she said, moodily. And then she sighed. "Actually, my main interest isn't in that kind of thing anymore. It's more in applications. Autonomous prosthesis, mostly."
Then she changed expression and the subject. Without warning, she asked,
"Ranjit, why do you keep covering your mouth like that?"
It was a more personal question than he'd expected from her. He was, however, quite aware of the way his hand kept covering his face. She persisted,
"Is it your teeth that bother you?"
He conceded, "I know what I look like."
"Well, so do I, Ranjit. You look like an honest, decent, and extremely intelligent man who hasn't gotten around to letting a dentist repair his bite."
She shook her head at him.
"It's the easiest thing in the world, Ranjit. And you will not only look better, you'll chew better."
She stood up.
"I promised Aunt B that I wouldn't stay longer than 10 minutes, and she promised me that I could ask you if you wanted to swim in the ocean for a change. Anilaweli Beach. Do you know where that is? We've got a little beach house there, so if you'd care to—"
Oh, yes, Ranjit would care to.
"We'll work it out," she said, and surprised him by giving him a hug.
"We missed you," she said, and then drew back to look at him.
"Gamini said you asked him about his old girlfriend. Do you have any of that kind of question for me?"
He said. And then, "Well, yes, I suppose you mean about that Canadian." She grinned. "Yes, I suppose I do." "Well, the Canadian was in Bora Bora, last I heard, where they were building an even bigger hotel. But that was long ago. We don't keep in touch."
Ranjit hadn't even known that Gamini and Myra were aware of each other's existence, much less that they were apparently on easy chatting terms. That wasn't all he hadn't known. His density of visitors was getting more so, with the lawyer from Dr. Bandara's office coming in with more documents to sign.
It's not that your father's estate is at all complicated, he told Ranjit apologetically. It's just that you were reported missing, and somebody in the bureaucracy interpreted that to mean presumed dead, so we have to clear that up.
And then there were the police. Not that anybody was filing any charges against Ranjit himself. Disaram made sure of that before he would allow any questioning at all. But they had loose ends to tie up about the piracy, and Ranjit was the only one who could help tie them. Then there was the question of Myra de Souza's autonomous prostheses, whatever they were. His data searches were of limited help. True, they coached him to the right spelling, but what had AI to do with artificial limbs or hearing aids?
Beatrix Vorholst helped him out there.
Oh, they're not talking about smart wooden legs, Ranjit, she told him. It's more subtle than that. The idea is to manufacture a lot of really tiny robots that they inject into your bloodstream, and they are programmed to recognize and destroy, say, cancer cells.
Huh, he said, considering the idea and liking it. It was, of course, the exact right kind of project to interest Myra de Souza. And these little robots, are they working out?
Mevrouw Vorholst gave him a sad little smile.
If they'd had them a few years ago, I might not be a widow today.
No, they're still just hopes. There just isn't the funding for the research. Even Myra has been waiting and waiting for her own project to be funded, and it just doesn't happen. Oh, there's plenty of money for research, as long as what is being researched is some kind of weapon.
When at last Ranjit was able to take Myra de Souza up on her invitation, Beatrix Vorholst was happy to provide him with a car and driver. When they were well along the road to the beach, he began to recognize landmarks. He and Gamini had, of course, checked this beach out in their exploration of everything the area had to offer. Not much had changed. The beaches still had their quota of good-looking young women in trivial bathing costumes, of which there were quite a few. Ranjit had no idea what the de Souza beach house would look like until the driver pointed it out. Tile roof, screened lanai around the door, nicely planted with bright flowers. It was only when the door opened and Myra de Souza came out wearing a light robe over a bikini that was fully as fashionable and trivial as any other along the beach that he was sure he was in the right place. Then, not quite so sure, because right behind her was a 5 or 6-year-old girl. Ranjit experienced a quick, dismaying reality shift. 6-year-old girl? Myra's? Had he been gone quite that long? He hadn't. Ada Labrouille was the child of Myra's sister, now seriously pregnant with another, and for that reason quite happy to grant her daughter's wish to spend as much time as possible with her favorite aunt. Myra herself was happy to have Ada there, not least because Ada's mother had sent along Ada's nanny to make sure the child was no inconvenience. When Ranjit had changed and been anointed with UV repellent cream by Myra, which in itself was one of his nicer recent experiences, the two of them minced across the hot sands to the pleasingly cool waters of the Gulf. What was most wonderful about a Sri Lankan beach, apart from the company, was that the water deepens so gradually, many dozens of meters from the shoreline he could still stand up straight. He and Myra didn't go much farther than waist deep, and they didn't swim as much as they happily threw themselves about in the water. Ranjit didn't resist the temptation to show how far he could swim underwater, nearly 100 meters, a lot less than he had done as a teenager near Swami Rock, but still enough to get compliments from Myra, which was what the purpose had basically been. The shrewdness of Myra's deal with the nanny then became evident. By the time they were showered and changed, a pleasant luncheon had been laid out for them. When they finished with that, the nanny took Ada away for a nap, and herself away to wherever it was she went when not visibly on duty. By and large, that was one of the pleasantest parts of the day for Ranjit. However, when Myra announced that she really needed to put in the exercise of at least a couple 100 yards of actual swimming, and no, Ranjit shouldn't come with her because he needed to keep his time in bright sunlight down to a safe minimum until his skin got used to the stuff again, he was comfortably aware that she would be back. And for the last 20 minutes or so, he had been beginning to wonder if he had properly expanded one of Sophie Germain's terms. He had just about convinced himself there had been no mistake when little Ada came back from her nap. She looked around for her aunt, but was sufficiently reassured when Ranjit waved an arm in the direction of where Myra's arms and kicks were propelling her along. Then Ada got herself a fruit juice and sat down to oversee whatever it was that Ranjit was doing. By and large, Ranjit preferred to be unwatched during his tussles with mathematics. Ada, however, seemed to have her own rules of audienceship. She didn't wail about being kept on the beach, wasn't even morose about it. When Ranjit bought her an ice from one of the beach's wandering vendors, she ate it slowly, her eyes fixed on the things he was writing in his notebook. When she finished, she ran down to the water's edge to wash the stickiness off her fingers before she asked politely, "Can I see what you're doing?" By then, Ranjit was quite reassured about his use of the German formulation. He opened the notebook on the table before him, interested to see what she would make of the German identity. She studied the line of symbols for a moment, then announced, "I don't think I understand that." "It's difficult," Ranjit agreed. "I don't think I can explain it to you just now either. However," he paused, examining her. She was a lot younger than Tiffany Kanakaratnam, of course, but then she had the advantage of a better educated and more sophisticated family. "Maybe I can show you something," he said. "Can you count on your fingers?" "Of course I can," she said, just one moiety of courtesy short of indignation. "Look," she said, raising one finger at a time. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. "Yes, that's very good," Ranjit said. "But you're only counting up to 10. Would you like to know how to count to 1,023? By the time he finished showing the child the all-fingers-extended binary representation of 1,023, Myra was back from her swim and listening as intently as Ada. When he was done, the child looked at her aunt, now toweling her hair dry.
"That's quite good, don't you think, Aunt Myra?"
And to Ranjit,
"Do you know any other tricks?"
Ranjit hesitated. His one other trick he had never even shown to Tiffany Kanakaratnam, but Myra was in this audience.
"Actually," he said, "I do,"
and moved off the boarded part of the bungalow's lanai so he could scratch a circle in the sand.
"That's a rupee," he said.
"Well, of course, it's really just a picture of a rupee, but let's say it's a real coin. If you flip it, there are two possible ways it can come down, either as heads or as tails."
"Or if it fell in the sand, it could land on edge," Ada said.
He looked at her, but the child Ada's expression was innocent. "So we don't flip on the beach, we flip on a craps table in the casino. Now, if you flip two coins, each of the coins can come down either heads or tails. That means there are four possible outcomes. They can be heads-heads, heads-tails, tails-heads, or tails-tails. While if there are three coins, there are eight possibilities. Heads-heads-heads, heads-heads-tails, heads-"
"Ranjit," Myra interrupted him, smiling, but with the faintest hint of annoyance in her voice.
"Ada does know what 2 to the 3rd power is."
"Well, of course she does," he said meekly.
"Now, here's the thing. You take this stick and draw in as many more coins to the line as you want to. I won't look. Then when you're done, within 10 seconds or less, I will undertake to write down the exact number of possible outcomes if that number of coins are flipped. And," he added, holding up one finger, "just to make it more interesting, what I'm going to do is let you cover up as many of the coins as you like from either end of the line, so I won't be able to tell how many coins are there."
Ada, who had been listening carefully, said,
"Wow! Can he do that, Aunt Myra?"
Myra said firmly, "No, not if he doesn't peek or cheat in some other way." Then to Ranjit, "You aren't going to peek?"
"No."
"And you won't know how many coins are actually in the row?" He pursed his lips. "I didn't say anything about what I would know."
But no, I won't.
Then it's impossible, she declared.
But when Ranjit invited her to put him to the test, she made him turn around and set Ada to watch his eyes to see that he wasn't making use of some accidental window that could serve as a mirror. Then she swiftly smoothed most of the coins out of existence, leaving just three. She winked at Ada, and then draped her beach towel so that it covered two of the remaining three, and also covered a full meter of no coins at all, and said, "You're on." Ranjit turned slowly, as though he had all the time in the world, while Ada squealed,
"Hurry, Ranjit, you only have 10 seconds, or five now, or maybe only two."
He gave the child a smile.
"Don't worry," he admonished.
He leaned forward and for the first time glanced at where the row of circles had been, took the stick, and at one end of the row scratched a straight line. Then as he was removing Myra's towel, he said, "There's your answer," and grinned.
"Huh,"
he said, admiring the result.
"Very clever."
He waited for a reaction from Myra to the drawing in the sand. 1000. Myra stared in puzzlement for a moment, and then her expression cleared.
"Oh, my God, yes, it's the binary number for the decimal number 8. And that's the right answer, too."
Ranjit, still grinning, nodded and turned to Ada, now a little apprehensive. Should he explain again how binary notation worked? 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, for 1, 2, 3, 4? He hesitated. But the child's lips had broken into a smile.
"You didn't say you were going to go binary, Ranjit, but then you didn't say you weren't either, so I guess that's all right. It's a good trick."
She delivered her verdict with enough adult gravity to sustain Ranjit's smile. His curiosity was piqued, though. "Tell me something, Ada. Do you really know what binary numbers are?" She became mock indignant.
"But of course I do, Ranjit. Don't you know who Aunt Myra made my parents name me after?"
Myra was the one who responded to Ranjit's puzzled look.
"I'm guilty," she admitted. "When my sister and her husband couldn't agree on a name for the baby, I suggested Ada. Ada Lovelace was my heroine and role model, you know. All of my friends fixated on women like Shiva or Wonder Woman or Joan of Arc, but the only woman I wanted to be just like when I grew up was Countess Ada Lovelace."
"Countess?" Ranjit began, and then snapped his fingers.
"Of course, the computer woman in, when was it, the 1800s? Lord Byron's daughter, who wrote the first computer program ever for Charles Babbage's calculating machine."
"That one, yes," Myra agreed. "Of course, that machine never got built. They didn't have the technology, but the program was good. She's why they named the software language Ada." The daily beach drive had become a fixed date, and then Ranjit thought of a way to make it even better. Disaram had opened a line of bank credit for him, based on the anticipation of his father's estate, which meant not only that he then had an actual bank account with actual rupees in it that he could spend, but meant he had a credit card as well. Ranjit had noticed the beachside restaurants up above the tree line and decided to take Myra to dinner. His driver stopped at one of the restaurants along the road, but when Ranjit opened the door to investigate, the smells were not encouraging. The second he tried was better. He actually went inside, got a menu, sniffed thoughtfully, and told the person who gave him the menu that he'd probably be back, but he made no promises about when. But in the third, Ranjit got a menu, but hardly looked at it. The aroma from the kitchen, the way the few diners were lingering over their tea and sweets. Ranjit inhaled deeply and made a reservation. And when he issued the actual invitation to Myra, she looked uncertain for only a moment and then said, "Of course, it would be lovely." Which meant Ranjit had only the day to get through before he could have the pleasure of being the one who provided something for her. Ada wasn't there, so they actually swam together, farther out than usual, and when they came back, they dressed and sat with drinks on the lanai, idly talking. Well, Myra was doing most of the talking. It used to be a lot livelier here, she said, gazing out over the nearly empty sand. When I was tiny, there were 2 deluxe hotels right down the beach, and a lot more restaurants.
Ranjit looked at her curiously. You miss the lively times?
Oh, not really. I like it peaceful, the way it is. But my parents used to go dancing there, and now there's nothing.
Ranjit nodded. The Boxing Day tsunami, he said wisely. But she was shaking her head. Long before that, she said. It was 1984, the beginning of the Civil War. Some of the first battles were fought right here, sea tigers making a landing so they could launch an attack on the airport. The army took the hotels over as firing positions, so the tigers took care of the hotels. My parents were right here, couldn't get away until things calmed down a little and the roads reopened. My mom said the tracers were like a fireworks display, screaming in from the assault boats and back out from the hotels. They called it the entertainment.
Ranjit wanted to make a response, but didn't know how to do it. Not in words, maybe. What he really wanted to do was put an arm around her. He settled for a sort of first step, putting his hand over hers as it rested on the arm of her chair. She didn't seem to mind. The ruined old buildings were still there while I was growing up, she said. You know what finally took care of them? That was the tsunami. Otherwise, I think they'd still be right there. She turned toward him, smiling, and looking quite a lot as though she wanted to be kissed. He put it to the test. It turned out that his estimate had been correct. She had. And she was the one who took his hand and led him back into the beach house with that welcoming couch, just right for 2, and Ranjit discovered that sexual intercourse with a woman was not only a good thing in itself, but was several times better when the woman was someone you liked and respected and really wanted to spend a lot of time in the company of. And then there was the dinner that he hosted, and that was great, too. So all in all, that day on the beach was a great success, and Myra and Ranjit at once made plans to do it again. Often. It didn't quite work out that way, though, because the very next day something happened to change their plans. Ada LaBroy was with them that day, and so was her nanny, who kept giving sidelong glances at Myra and Ranjit, convincing Ranjit that what the 2 of them had done was written all over their faces. It was a perfectly normal day, though, if you didn't count that when he arrived, Myra kissed him on the lips instead of the usual cheek, until they were back from their outing in the water and wearing their robes and helping themselves to their drinks. And then Ada saw something. Hand shading her eyes from the sun, she asked, Is that man who works for the Vorholsts again? And when Ranjit stood up to get a better look, yes, it was the Vorholst butler, moving a great deal faster than Ranjit had ever seen him move before, and holding a sheaf of papers clenched tightly in one hand. He seemed excited. Not just excited, impatient to get the pages to Ranjit, so that he was still 5 or 6 meters away when he called, Sir, I think this may be what you've been waiting for. And it was. Well, it sort of was. Well, what it was a lengthy analysis of Ranjit's paper, or actually 5 different analyses of the paper, each apparently written by a different, but unnamed, person, and what they'd done, in exacting and almost unreadable detail, was go over every last passage that Ranjit himself had already found to contain a mistake or an unclarity. Plus they'd found no fewer than 11 other passages that needed cleaning up just as much, but that Ranjit hadn't caught in his own reading. There were 42 sheets of paper in all, each densely written over with words and equations. As Ranjit quickly scanned each one and hurried to the next, he passed the sheets to Myra, his frown getting deeper with every page. "Holy gods," he said at last, "what are they saying? Are they just telling me all the reasons they have for rejecting the bloody thing?" Myra was biting her lip as she reread the final page for the 4th or 5th time. Then a smile broke through. She handed the page back to Ranjit. Dear, she said, in the excitement of the moment, neither of them noticed that she had never used that word to him before. What's the very last word at the end of the message? Ranjit snatched the page from her. What word? He demanded. You mean at the very bottom here, where it says, congratulations? That is exactly what I mean, she informed him, the smile now broad and tender and in every way exactly the best kind of smile he could ever have wished for from Myra de Souza. Have you ever heard of anyone being congratulated for a failure? They're publishing your paper, Ranjit. They think you've finally done it. Chapter 19 Fame. As soon as that magazine prints your article, you're going to be famous, really famous, Beatrix Vohulst declared as soon as Ranjit was back in her house that night. She was wrong, though. It didn't take that long. Days before the magazine's printing presses began to turn out the hundreds of thousands of copies that would bring Ranjit's fame to the world, the fame had already arrived. Someone, perhaps someone on Nature's staff, or among their referees, had leaked the story, and so reporters began to call. First it was the BBC, then someone from the New York Times, and then it was everybody, all of them wanting Ranjit to explain just what it was that Monsieur Fermat had been playing at, and why it had taken all this time to prove he'd been right. All that was easy enough for Ranjit to answer. What was harder was what to say when the callers asked about the rumor that he'd been jailed for something or other, too. But there, Dusaram was a help. Simply tell them that your attorney has instructed you not to discuss any of that because there is a suit pending. I'll make that true by bringing an action on your behalf against the cruise line. But I don't want to take their money, Ranjit objected. Don't worry, you won't get any. I'll make sure of that, but that's a sufficient reason for anybody to refuse to answer any question. Since Dr. Bhandara has impressed on me that the whole matter is not to be discussed. That stratagem worked fine, but did nothing to decrease the number of people who wanted him to sit down in a quiet one-on-one with them, that is, with them and their team of anything up to a dozen recording technicians, and tell them all about this Fermat person and why he had behaved so peculiarly. For that, explained Dusaram, when Ranjit again turned to him for help, the only way to temper their curiosity about him was to go public. That is, to have a press conference and tell the whole story at once to everyone who wanted to hear. They were sitting by the Vohulst's pool, Dusaram and Ranjit and Myra de Souza and Beatrix Vohulst herself. Trips to the de Souza beach house were no longer much fun for Ranjit and Myra, because the press pests had found them there, so Myra now came to swim with Ranjit in the pool.